Years ago, I took people on a journey. One time I did take people on a journey to Unity Village, but also some other spiritual journeys. And one of them was to Assisi, Italy. We called that particular trip Simple Peace. And while we were there, we were kind of steeped in St. Francis of Assisi and that energy. But some lesser known to some is his very best friend was St. Clare. And we went to St. Clare's convent, and one of the young women on the trip, I noticed a shift in her. Immediately as we walked into the convent, she looked so at peace and so at home. And we all just kind of quietly had our experience, and I think a little bit of a tour maybe. We went then out onto the grounds, and there were olive trees. And I saw her resting against one of the olive trees and snapped this photo of her. And later I checked it out with her to say, you know, it seemed like you were really having quite an experience there. And she said, yeah, I really did resonate deeply and felt very much at home. And kind of without saying, we both kind of felt the sense of maybe she was one of St. Clare's sisters. And that olive tree, in fact, could be an olive tree, if so, that she rested against during that time. Because olive trees can live anywhere from 400 to 5,000 years. So it's certainly possible. It's those moments, isn't it, of touching the mystery, or witnessing the mystery being touched by someone else that we feel inside of us, that brings us that sense of home, that we're home in the true reality, in the real reality of life itself. And often that coming home, it brings a sense of peace, or being in peace feels like coming home. Do you relate to that? Is that kind of maybe how you would relate to feeling at peace, is feeling at home, being at home in our own hearts? So peaceful states of mind come to us when we cease the other stuff that takes us out of peace, right? Those things that we've been talking about over the past weeks of worry and concern and judgment and all that stuff that is a part of our human experience and sometimes comes into our minds and thoughts. And what our work here is on the spiritual journey is to not plant a seed of it, not let it grow there and take root, right? But just to notice and to recognize and then to shift back in to home, to peace, to the place where compassion grows, forgiveness comes, and all of those good things. So we've been hearing a lot lately about ceasefires and homelands, and I know a lot of us are really hopeful that ceasefires remain across homelands for our human family. And we also hopefully cease the fires in our own relationships, in our own neighborhoods, in our own families, in our own selves, so that we can come home, that we can be at peace. And we all hope that it endures. And when we have moments where it's not there, we can just know as we become practiced and practiced and practiced at coming home again, and coming back to peace again, that it's very easy then for us to shift. Even in moments of great difficulty, it becomes easier because it has become the route that we have created for ourselves. And it's habitual then. In 1974, the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat came to the UN General Assembly, and he was holding in his hand one of these. And he said, I have come today bearing an olive branch and a freedom fighter's gun. Do not let the olive branch fall from my hand. That's what we want to do. Do not let the olive branch fall from my hand. Do not let my mind go into fight. Do not let my mind and then my words and all of that creates separation happen. Instead, it's an ask for support. Help me to hold the olive branch. If you offer an olive branch to someone, an invitation for reconciliation or peace, ask ask them to help you hold it. Because then the two of you together can create that. So I love that he came asking, do not let it fall from my hand. And it can be our ask as well. We can ask within the community, help me to hold my olive branch. Help me to keep it in my hand and not pick up all the other stuff that creates dis-ease, discomfort, conflict, chaos, all that other stuff that we don't want anymore. We had enough of all that? Yeah. And we're on a human journey, so it'll come again. And that's okay too, right? That's a part of it too, is acceptance. Okay, this comes again. And I am so practiced that this never leaves my hand anymore or my heart. And so now I know what to do. Because coming home, feeling that peace, is really, I think, what most of us are after. And it can endure. It can endure. It's possible. So the olive tree has a lot of symbolism throughout our history of reminding us of enduring peace. It goes all the way back, well, probably back further. I think it does go back further. We know about Noah's Ark and the olive branch that came in the dove's mouth to let Noah know that the flood was over. And there's many other examples. One of the olive tree itself, one of the examples comes from ancient Greece, where the goddess Athena and the god Poseidon had a competition to be the patron of that city. And so the god Poseidon struck with his staff the ground, and a spring of salt water came up. And Athena planted an olive tree. And the people said, well, the olive tree brings us wood, it brings us oil, it brings us shade, it brings us food. We're going to go with the olive tree. And that is the history of Athens, Greece, named after Athena. So the first significant threat to this olive tree came when the Persian army invaded Greece in 480 BC. And a lot of the sacred temples and sites were burned to the ground, including that olive tree. But Herodotus wrote about what happened to that olive tree. Even the day after the fire, there was a meter-long sprout out of that little stump of the olive tree. And the Athenians took it as hope that their city would prevail again, that it would rise up again and thrive. And rise up again it did. Many of the classics that we know about that came out of Greece came from that resurrection, if you will, of Athens. And the same is true for us on our journey, isn't it? When even if things seem like they all got burned to the ground, you know, or something in our life has been burned to the ground, there again is that new growth out of that virgin soil. And once again, an opportunity for us to thrive, to live more fully, to express even more expansively than we did before that difficulty came in our lives. So I know a lot of us walk around with wounds from our past, right? Of course we do. That's part of our growth. And to know then that we can be that proverbial and in truth, that wounded healer, that brings forth out of the wound the new growth, the new possibilities, the new offerings that we can give. So from that resilient olive tree, all the way back to Athens, Greece, or anywhere you've seen one around town, comes the olive branch, right? That symbol of peace, the symbol of an offering of from our hearts of a bridge, a reconciliation, and maybe even extending into forgiveness, perhaps, depending on the situation for you and wherever you are. So what is forgiveness then, if an olive branch is the first step, and that is really where you're headed with that? What is this thing called forgiveness? My favorite definition comes from Robert Holden, who's a psychologist who studies happiness. And he says this, true forgiveness is a willingness to change your mind about yourself. It is a willingness to believe that you are whole and that no one can threaten or take away your wholeness. I shared this quote with Lisa a couple days ago, and it inspired her so much she wrote the meditation song you heard today, which was beautiful. When we remember we are whole, no one can threaten or take away our wholeness. It's when we forget, right? That's when you hurt me. That's when we get into that space. And then the tool when we forget to bring us back is forgiveness. What a beautiful tool we have in forgiveness. And never forget when you're forgiving someone else, there's self-forgiveness in that too. Or there might just be self-forgiveness, who knows? Only you know that. So some of you probably remember the teachings of Colin Tipping, radical forgiveness, they're called. And Colin, what's different about radical forgiveness than just, you know, the plain old forgiveness, as if that weren't enough, right? But plain old forgiveness is like I'm addressing the hurts of the past, right? So there is a sense of, you know, at least maybe even just a verbal, I forgive you, or I forgive me, or whatever this situation may be. But what radical forgiveness does for us is it opens up a pathway, it shows us how to open up a pathway that helps us rewrite the story of what happened. And so it's a growth, it's a spiritual growth path. It includes in it the story of our triumph, the story of our understanding, the story of our expansion. It's not just the wound that gets addressed, but it's the healer that comes forth. And so the steps of radical forgiveness, and this is, of course, a very short overview, are these five steps. The first is to tell your story. And you can write it out, or you can tell it to a trusted friend who can hold space for you. And when you tell that story initially, it's not the pretty version of the story, right? It's the blah story. It's got all this stuff, you know? The drama, the blame, the, you know, whatever is there. It's just the real, authentic story with all your interpretation and laid bare. And then the second step is absolutely crucial, and it is to feel the feelings that come when you tell that story. Because there are certainly still feelings there if there is forgiveness to be had. Somebody once asked me in my last congregation, how do you know when your forgiveness is complete? And he was asking in the context of a relationship, and I said, oh, I know that one firsthand. When you can imagine that person, let's just say right now, walking into the sanctuary, and you have either neutral feelings or happy feelings, it's over. But if you've got that, there's still work to do. And so it's that recognition, right? There's feelings to be felt as we tell this story. Even if you feel like a lot of things have been resolved, there may still be feelings there. So don't try to spiritually bypass, because it won't allow you to even go any further in the process. And the third step is to collapse the story just into the facts. This is often very eye-opening for us. When we have to strip it down to just the facts, I always think of Sergeant Friday from Dragnet, if anybody remembers that. With his little notebook, right? Just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. So we just like can imagine there's Sergeant Dragnet asking, and we're, oh, right, there's more interpretation. Okay, let me go back to what exactly was just said and how it was said, you know, in the quote, or what you can view, you know, on the camera, just what you can see on the camera. So collapsing it might take a few rounds before you can shake all the interpretation and perception out and just have the bare bones of the story. This is what happened. She, he, they said, I felt, I said, this went on, they left, I left, whatever happened, you know, just like that. And then the next step is where we really begin to transform then and to move into that spiritual growth opportunity, to that healing space. And that's when we reframe the story in a way that it is expanded to include what good has come, how I have changed, how I have been transformed by this experience. Yes, at the time, very unfortunate, very hurtful experience, but look at who I am today because of it. What changed? What direction in my life changed? What happened in my life after that? Who am I now? How I have grown? How did that relationship affect, or that experience or that situation affect me in a way that today I'm sowing good seeds from that? That's the reframed story. And then once we have reframed the story, and we can just remember as we're reframing the story, this anonymous quote, life is 5% what happens to you and 95% what you make of what happens to you. So we're just getting into that essence, and then we're reframing it into what has come. And then the last step is integrating that, integrating your new story, feeling it. I like to say incorporating, because it's like in the body, right? We incorporate it into ourselves. We know it now, and you can do that. There's a lot of ways you can consciously aid yourself in that process. Walking with this, your new story, telling your new story as you're walking, write it all out, record your voice telling the story. That can be very powerful, to hear your own voice telling your new story, and just letting that all fall into the cells of your body and become your new embodied story. Edwin Gaines talks about, she didn't maybe know about this process, but many of you know Edwin Gaines, and she talks about her own journey and how she would tell the same story of her divorce and how awful it was, oh, and sometimes add more dramatic detail, right? And she liked that. She liked, at that time, she liked that drama and all that. And as she became a Unity minister and became a prosperity teacher, the love of that began to fall away, and she realized how it wasn't serving. At some point, somebody stopped her in her tracks and said, Edwin, stop telling that story. I don't want to hear it anymore. She was just floored, you know? But because of that, she learned to collapse her story, to reframe her story, and to incorporate a new story. And it touched a lot of our lives, the power of her prosperity teachings. Wow. So I give thanks to Reverend Sheila, who taught a lot of this. Remember Reverend Sheila? Yeah. Sheila was an associate minister here. I think she ended her time about the time I came in, maybe at the end of 2016. And Sheila was certified as a radical forgiveness teacher. So some of you may have learned radical forgiveness from Sheila. If you want to learn more about it, you could reach out to Sheila. You can also go to radicalforgiveness.org, and there's a worksheet that takes you through the 5 steps and lots more free resources available to you there. So speaking of Reverend Sheila and the Olive Branch, when she left, in her honor at the Unity home where she lived, an olive tree was planted. And it has grown by leaps and bounds. So there's Reverend Sheila, if you never met her or you want to remember how fabulous she is. And there's the olive tree, which was way smaller than that when it was planted. Yeah, so the olive branch that you received today comes from the olive tree. Did everybody get one? How many, if you didn't get one, please raise your hand. Bob Hardy over here needs one. Oh, here come more. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, just keep your hand up if you didn't get one. Karen needs one up here. So if you think about the lineage, right? So we're holding part of a unity tree that's part of the ministry lineage here, that's part of connected to the radical forgiveness, and on it goes, right? The depth of what we touch together. Did we run out and have to go get more? Thanks to my wife, Brenly, who ran and got more clippings this morning to make sure everybody got one. Okay, everybody has one now. Yes? Okay, excellent. Well, as you hold your olive branch, I want to invite you to just gaze at it, to be with it. I see some people smelling and touching. That's wonderful. And just to consider, if you want to leave your eyes open and be with the branch or close your eyes, to whom would you offer an olive branch in your life right now? An olive branch symbolizing peace, for starters. And what is your olive branch? What does it represent? Is it a first gesture toward peace and reconciliation? Maybe it's for yourself, an offering of peace within yourself. Kindness. Maybe it's a crack in the light of forgiveness, a movement toward forgiveness to somebody who's alive or made their transition. To yourself, once again. Or maybe it's the full symbol of your intentional, radical forgiveness to move all the way through the process. So I invite you to just infuse this olive branch with divine love, with peace, with forgiveness. And infuse it with your peaceful intention, whatever that may be on your heart today. Let it be a symbol of your own enduring peace. And I invite you to say this with me. I freely extend the olive branch and come home to peace within. By taking this step in the direction of peace and forgiveness, we begin to let go and let God, as we like to say, right? We begin to open ourselves up and give over to the Spirit, let go of the story, and move into the possibilities of who we are and who we can be. And we are capable of so much more than we often think we are. You know, we hear these stories about living masters, like Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad and others. And we might say, well, yeah, that's great for them. And I know Jesus is our way shower, and I don't know if I can quite embody that, right? And so we set apart. And yet living amongst us, including yourself, are ordinary human beings that do extraordinary things day after day after day. Deep levels of forgiveness and compassion and profound love is available to us, is possible for you to embody. It is possible for you to be like one of those living masters, whether anyone will ever know your name in the history books or not. So the story I'm about to tell you is a very difficult story to hear. It's a true story. It's about such a woman who embodied this kind of forgiveness. I don't know her name. I can't find her name anywhere. And so she remains a symbol for all of us. I do know this. She was an elderly black South African woman. And she stood one day in an emotionally charged courtroom listening to white police officers as they acknowledged all the atrocities that had been perpetrated in the name of apartheid. Officer Vanderbrock acknowledged his responsibility in the death of this woman's son. When her son was 18 years old, he had come into their home and shot her son point blank. Then he and his other fellow officers partied while they burned her son's body. 7 years later, he came knocking again and took her husband. She didn't know her husband's whereabouts for about 2 years. And then he came and got her one day and brought her to the place where her husband was. He was bound to a wood pile, and she was forced to watch as they poured gasoline upon him and set his body on fire. And that day, she was standing across from Officer Vanderbrock at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission work in South Africa, and the commission's officers were asking her now, what would she like to have happen to Officer Vanderbrock? She was calm and she was clear. I'd like three things. First, I want Officer Vanderbrock to take me to the place where my husband's body was burned so I can gather up the dust and give him a proper burial. Secondly, I want him to know that he took away all the family I ever had. And I still have a lot of love to give. So I would like him to come to my home in the ghetto twice a month and let me be a mother to him. True story. Third, she said, I want him to know that he is forgiven by God and that my forgiveness is real. And in order for him to really know that, would somebody please lead me across the courtroom so that I may embrace him and he may feel the realness of my heart and my forgiveness. On the way over, Vanderbrock fainted because he was so overwhelmed. And in that courtroom that day, somebody began to sing a familiar song that others began to gather and sing along as well. And that day, it sounded a little bit like this.
And I hope you'll sing with me.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a soul like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind.
just take a moment to breathe into our hearts. And to remember the profound love that is emulated from us by brave souls such as this woman. That we too can rise above anything and be the very essence of divine love. We can forgive the unthinkable because we are made of this love. We have come to embody it, to be it, to bring forth the peace that heals our planet, that heals humanity, that heals our own hearts and bodies and minds and souls and relationships. It reminds us of the truth of who we are, that we have come here to be truth and reconciliation. We have come here to be the very presence of that, to hold the court of that in our lives, in our relationships, in our communities. So we rise up because of this woman, this unnamed, amazing woman who showed us that the unthinkable can be forgiven, that we can be mother to a son or a daughter who has hurt us, and we can be a child, a forgiving child of a parent who has hurt us as well. Because we are all brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, cousins. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for the amazing grace that we embody now. And so it is.